Time to turn down your cell phones.
Anybody have mail for Los Angeles or Dallas, Texas? I'd be happy to accommodate you. I'll be here next week, don't worry. I'll be here Tuesday, I'll be here Monday afternoon, a weekend. Carol, what do you say? Michigan Cup, right? I know, I can read your mind.
I'm just listening.
Getting dizzy. Okay. I mean, I have a shiur tonight in shul at 8 o'clock. At 9 o'clock, Nesher picks me up from the shul. When I come back on Monday, landing at 12:20, I have a shiur at the class at the Herzog College in Hechal Shlomo. And I told my students, don't leave. I'll be there at 1:45. That's it. What? It's a short visit to LA. No big deal tonight. No big deal. Okay. Bakshan.
Do you mind if I dealt with the question I asked you a few weeks ago about the Avla? I did research on it.
Okay, let's hear.
The question was why we say the Ahava in Kiddush.
On Shabbat,
and on Yom Tov.
Right.
And the answer I saw was that Shabbat was given at Marah before the Aseret HaDibrot.
Right.
Whereas at the Aseret HaDibrot, the rest of the students went with Har Sinai over our heads as somewhat.
So this was B'Ahavah. Okay.
So Marah was B'Ahavah as opposed to compulsory.
It's an answer. Okay. The Rav always said there were two types of answers. One answer where the question is eliminated, and the second type of answer is where the question is still there. The Rav said one of the indications of answers that the question is still there is if, let's say, the source that you're looking at, Gemara, Tosfot, they provide too many answers to the same question. Like the famous, as you mentioned in Hanukkah, you know, the famous question is called the Weltskasha, the whole world asks. I mean, you know, at the UN, they're talking about it, the question of the Beit Yosef, how come there are 8 days Hanukkah if there's one day that they had oil, so the whole miracle was 7 days, right? I'm sure they debated it at the General Assembly and so on. It's a Weltskasha. The world asked that kasha.
I think the answer was the settlements.
The settlements, right. Well, so I'm familiar about three or four answers, but when I was on Hanukkah, I was down Mincha once in one of the little Mincha factories in Gula. So there's a bookstore there, the Olam HaSefer Torani. So he has a shelf there for all the up-to-dates for him. So on Hanukkah, he had a sefer of the 1,000 answers to the question of the Beit Yosef. 1,000 answers. That's a sure proof that the kasha is still there.
It's a
nace
that they found the oil.
I think that's one of the answers, by the way. But, you know, you have 999 to go. Right? All right. Today we're going to try to combine our subject of Sefer Mitzvot and the Rambam's definition and things that are unique, perhaps, in Rambam and link it a little bit to Parshat HaShavua because we're dealing with the funeral of Yaakov Avinu. It's very interesting that the parsha is called Vayichi Yaakov and it all talks about the end of Yaakov Avinu's lifetime. That's no accident. Chazal say Yaakov lo meit. Right, there's a list of about 10 people who Chazal gave some expression, they never died. That doesn't mean they physically never died, but there's something about them that has lived on. They were personalities that were above, you know, higher than life, above life, in the sense that they encompassed so much that Am Yisrael has just carried on as if they were there. Elio Novi is one of them, right? Elvis Presley, a few of them. Baba Chereba.
Elvis Presley is not dead.
Oh, there you go. There you go.
Who's buried in his grave?
Right. They say that's the irony about the Baba Chereba and Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu, you know exactly that he died. You don't know where he's buried. The Baba Chereba, you know exactly where he was buried, except we're not sure he died. So. But you have to be a misnagad to handle these. If you're a chavav chachazit, this is very insulting. So I ask forgiveness. So anyway, Yaakov Avinu, Yaakov lo meit. Indeed, there's something about Yaakov Avinu that carries on with us. Ramban says in Parshat Vayechi that they, unlike Avraham, whose name change from Avram to Avraham became permanent, and no going back to the name Avram. With regard to the name change of Yaakov to Yisrael, the name Yaakov sticks, you know, is still there, and it indicates that Am Yisrael would be in two different phases. Phase Yaakov means Am Yisrael in Galut, from the word Ba'akev Esav on the heels, and phase Yisrael is Am Yisrael in a more redemptive Geula stance. Kisaritem Elokim Be'Manashim Batuchal, and Am Yisrael has been in this topsy turvy, a type of roller coaster ride between Yaakov and Yisrael throughout history. If you remember Parshat Balak, when Bilam, in practically all of the brachot that he gave, Matovo Alecha Yaakov, Mishkanotecha Yisrael, the whole thing divides between Yaakov and Yisrael, which means it was a very, very long-winded bracha that took into consideration the dual phases of Am Yisrael throughout the history. And even in Parshat Vayechi, you get this flip-flop, and that's what really generated Ramban's comment that this pasuk is reflective of the Geula stance, and that's why it says Yisrael. And this pasuk talks about Am Yisrael going into Mitzrayim, so it's the Yaakov name, and so on. The Ramban feels that this is very consistent. So the psukim kan there, Vayal, and Pesos number one, Vayal Yaakov likbor et aviv, Vayal Yosef, I'm sorry, Vayal Yosef likbor et aviv, Vayalu ito, kol avdei faro, zikne beito, v'chol zikne eretz Mitzrayim. And an entire delegation, entourage, a royal entourage, accompanies the family, Teretz Kenan. V'chol beit Yosef be'echav u'beit aviv, rak tapam v'tzonam karam ozvu et beretz Goshen. They left their flock in Eretz Goshen, which was really collateral that they're going to go back, that they're planning to return. It was a tremendous, tremendous crowd. They came to a place that's called Goren Ha'atad. That's where they delivered eulogies. And they mourned Yaakov for a week. The question is, how much of a precedent is this pasuk, Vayas le'aviv evel shivat yamim, with the notion of sitting Shiva? All right? So that's question number one. Vayar Yoshev Haaretz Hakanani et Evel Begoren Haatad, Vayamru Evel Kaved Zel Mitzrayim, Al Kain Karashma Avel Mitzrayim, Ashev Eva Yarden. This place drew a nickname subsequently, the mourning of Egypt, because the local inhabitants saw this tremendous, tremendous funeral that was going on at this place, Goren Ha'atad. The word Ha'atad, the plant, is a plant. Ha'atad, it shows up later in Tanakh. Which, if you've ever visited Neot Kedumim, which is on the 443 road after Modi'in, before you get to the end of the 443, it's a type of botanical reservation of all of the Tanakhic flora and botany from days of Tanakh. It's done very, very well. There was a fellow by the name of Ruven, Noga Ruveni, not a religious fellow, but a scholar and well-learned, and this was his pet project. It's almost the equivalent of the biblical zoo, but this is a biblical flora. And you can just walk around with the Tanakh. I mean, all the signs have the relevant psukim or relevant mamarei chazal, and you really begin to understand certain of the phrases in Shir HaShirim and Mishle and other things. So in Ramot we had one of our members in the shul was a madricha there, Nancy Benjamin, some of you may know her. And we used to bring our 7th graders from the Yeshiva HaShmonaim, a whole 10-minute ride from Neot Kedumim, and she would give them guided tours. We always scheduled different things. You can't do the whole thing in one tour anyway. So once we discussed the atad, and the atad is a plant that's very, very prickly. You can get scratches on your finger. But there's only one catch. You get the scratches on your finger, not by touching it, but if you stick your finger into the plant, it has a very, very smooth and soft feeling. You think, wow, this is really pleasurable. But then when you pull it out, you get a good scratch on all sides of your finger. It's almost like sometimes when you leave certain parking lots, So you have these teeth. When you go out one way, it's fine. Go out the other way. If you go in that way, you're going to have a flat tire. It's going to puncture all your tires. So you don't want to do that. So the atad has this feature that you stick your hand in, it's very smooth, and you pull it out, it's very, very prickly. So I pointed out once to the Madricha that it hit me. I said, maybe that's why the Torah points out that when Yaakov Avinu dies and they make the hesped at this place, it's at this place called Goren HaAtad. Why? Because the entry into Mitzrayim was royal. It was very smooth. It was on a silver platter. I mean, Yaakov, Paro assures them the best of the land of Goshen and the best of accommodations and everything. You know, that's how you know, we went in. But then, going out became a real tzara. It became a real problem. It was just like the atad. You pull it out, there were scratches on all sides. Vayeyamchu and so on. The Parshat Shmot, you read all the psukim that talk about the tzar, the pain and affliction that took place in Mitzrayim. So that's really it's symptomatic of or emblematic of the atad. So those are the relevant psukim. Before I take a look at this first source that we have here of Rambam, it's source number 2. It's actually not from the Sefer Mitzvot yet. It's a Hilchot. It's from the Mishneh Torah, and it's Hilchot Evel. Now, without even seeing what he says, we know the Rambam wrote 14 books, and we know he categorizes halacha. Other books categorized halacha. The Mishnah. The Mishnah is divided into 6 fundamental units. Shas, Shishas Sedrei Mishnah. So Zraim are the agricultural mitzvot. Moed are the Shabbat and Chagim. Nashim has to do with Kedusha, marriage, Gitnin, Chalitza, Yevama, and so on. Nezikin has to do with damages, all different forms. Kodashim, Beit HaMikdash activities. Taharot, spiritual tuma and taharot. Fine, so within each unit, you have subunits, you have mesechtot, and sometimes it's a little bit of a far cry, you know, why does it belong there? But usually you can figure it out. Usually it's because if something doesn't appear to be, maybe could have been somewhere else, or doesn't fit anywhere, so Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi had no choice, but he had to put it somewhere. So sometimes it's attached to a particular mesechet by association. Association. For example, where do you study about the laws of mourning, avelut, in the Mishnah and in the Gemara? It's a Masechet Moed Katan. Moed Katan is a nickname for Chol Moed, like junior Moed, junior Yom Tov. It's quasi Yom Tov, as we know. Certain things are restricted, certain things are permissible. Moed Katan. So in the third chapter of Moed Katan, it's Ein Megalchin B'Moed, that we're not allowed to take haircuts. The question of beard trimming. I'm very careful what I'm saying now because I didn't say shaving. Because those people think that it's asur to shave on Chol HaMoed. That's very problematic. Our Rebbe the Rav was of the opinion that in a clean shaven society, it's actually a mitzvah to shave on Chol HaMoed, to look like a mensch and not look like a person getting off of shiva when you come to Shul on Shmini Atzeret, which is basically what happens with a person who normally shaves every day and doesn't shave for a week. The Rav said that Ein Mikalchin B'Moed, Chazal never knew of a clean-shaven society. It didn't exist until modern days. The only ones who were clean-shaven were the Jews had contact in Middle Ages with the non-Jewish world, usually through the agency of the church. So the middleman was the priest. And how was a priest, a Komer, called in Yiddish? A Galach. Why is it Galach? Because he was Migulach. He was shaven. You know, they say a story of a, I'm sure, apocryphal story. It was a shtetl in Poland, and there was a Brit, and it was a small shtetl. They didn't have a moil, so they needed a moil. They couldn't find a moil. Somebody said, you know, there was a Jew, unfortunately, was a mumar. He went over to the other side, became a Christian. But he was once upon a time a moil, you know. Now he's a priest in the church, in the next in nearby. So maybe we can call him, he could do the Brit, just as a favor. So they call him, he does the Brit, and after the Brit he starts singing, instead of a Malach HaGoyel, he sings a Galach HaMoyel. So the... Yeah, where was I? What?
Why is it Moed Katan?
Moed Katan. Yeah, no. So Moed Katan is it's the Dine Avelus is thrown into the it's the third chapter of Masechet Moed Katan because there's no Avelut on Yom Tov. There's no Avelut on Chol HaMoed. If there's a Levaya on Chol HaMoed, the Shiva starts after. So once we're already bringing in that there's a detail in the Halachot of Yom Tov that there's no Avelut, so already the Mishnah throws in all the laws of Avelut. That's by association. That's how it happens. Now the Rambam could have spoken about Dine Avelut in various places in Mishnah Torah. We had a little bit of a problem with it. He didn't really know exactly where to stick it in. And then he was writing this Sefer, and he was up to the last book, the Sefer Shoftim, which deals with the laws of monarchy. Basically, Sefer Shoftim, the last book, is the book of authority. So there's monarchy, that's authority. And then there's Sanhedrin, Hilchot Sanhedrin, that's authority. And afterwards there's Hilchot Eidut, the laws of testimony, which is an adjunct to the laws of Sanhedrin and Beit Din. And at the end, it's there's the Hilchot Melachim is at the end. I'm sorry, Hilchot Melachim is at the very, very end. The beginning is actually Hilchot Sanhedrin. So it's all monarchy. He has also Hilchot Mamrim. Mamrim is the rebellion against the authority of the Torah Shabbat Peh, of the Sanhedrin. So it has all to do with authority. Fine, everything makes sense, what he has in that unit called Sefer Shoftim. And all of a sudden, right before the Chot Melachim, before the last section of the Mishnah Torah, throws in Hilchot Evel. What does Avelus have to do with this? So here he's going to explain himself. In source number two, Hilchot Evel, Yesh Bichlalan Arba Mitzvot. There are four mitzvot in this section. Achat mitzvot tasei, one positive. Bishalosh mitzvot lo tasei, three negative. The Rambam wrote an index to his book, which is phenomenal. Who in the 12th century, who wrote books already, wrote indexes? I mean, indexes is a modern thing. Vizel portan, here's the details. One, litabel ala krovim, to mourn the immediate relatives. Afilu kohen mitamei umitabel ala krovim. Right, a Kohen who normally would not go to a cemetery, would not attend the Levaya. I mean, he might come to a Levaya, but stand outside, as you know, until this very day. But if it's an immediate relative, one of the seven Krovim, so he is inside. Ve'ein adam mit'abel al haugei Beit Din. If someone was executed in Beit Din, so the family does not mourn. And not only does the family not mourn the loss, but the Beit Din had two cemeteries for executed victims. One was for the Niskalim v'Nisrafim, those were stoned and those were burnt, and the other cemetery for the Neharagim and Nechnakim, those who were decapitated and those who were choked, basically. So, I mean, the four measures of Skilas Reifa Harim Chelik. So for the four, there were two different cemeteries, which is in itself interesting. Just have one cemetery. You don't want to bury the executed people in the same Jewish cemetery, I understand. But why two? Because there's a difference in degree between the first two and the last two. That's interesting. I'll even say parenthetically, there's even a machloket on the degree of severity. Rabbi Shimon argues with Chachamim and says the order is Sreifa, Skila, Chenek, and Herek, which means if we take a list that we know, we're familiar with the Machzor of Yom Kippur, Val Chataim, Shanu Chayavim Aleim, Arba Mitot Beit Din, Skila, Sreifa, Herek, Chenek. So if Skila, Sreifa, Herek, Chenek is 1, 2, 3, 4, Rabbi Shimon, it's 2, 1, 4, 3. Sreifa, Skila, Chenek, and Herek. So that's this question itself. Why? I mean, what are you arguing about? A list? So obviously, the argument has to do with severity. But both the Chachamim and Rabbi Shimon agree that the first two, whether it's 2-1 or 1-2, and the second, whether it's 3-4 or 4-3, are two different categories. And they're two different cemeteries. And if you recall, Rashi in Megillat Rut, where she says, Amech Ami velukayach elukai, Basher tamuti yamut, visham ekaver, where you will die, I will die, and there I will be buried. So Rashi, I have a whole drasha on this, and I'm going to lose now. Rashi says, Asher tamuti tamut, where you will die, I will die. I'm taking upon myself all the modes of execution. If God forbid I do something that deserves execution, just as you would have been executed for it, so would have I. The Sham Ekaver, and it would have been buried in the unique cemeteries for either Niskalim or Nisrafim, or the other cemetery for Neragin or Nechnakin. I mean, it's amazing what Chazal was trying to say there. Yeah.
There were a lot of executions.
No. The Mishnah Masechet Makot tells us that if a Beit Din executed once in 70 years, it was a bloody Beit Din. So, in theory, on the books, Mot Tamut is there. But the details of how to get a conviction with execution are so difficult that in reality it hardly took place. But there are exceptions. The Mishnah Sanhedrin reports that Shimon ben Shetach, who we know from the list in Pirkei Avot, he was the brother of what's her name, the Malkam, Shlom Tzion HaMalkam, and so he once executed 80 Nashim Mechashefot. Who dealt in witchcraft in one day. And the Chiddush was that even when Beit Din executed, there was no more than one per day. Because they didn't want to make this into a wholesale thing. And the Gemara uses that as an example of what's called Hora'at Sha'ah, emergency measure. And the Beit Din HaGadol had the Beit Din had the authority for emergency. He wanted to make a point. And he made a really, really very, very bloody point out of that. Yeah, what you were saying, yeah.
There was nobody who got decapitated?
I didn't say there weren't.
No. Can you give me an example? What would one example of each 1, 2, 3, 4 convictions?
I'm saying skila is stoning.
For what purpose?
Ah, for what? Chilul Shabbat.
Wow. They were
decapitated? No, stoning.
Stoning, okay.
For Hereg, what was the Avera? It may have something to do with one of the examples of Gilui Ariot, if not mistaken. I don't have to list in my head right now. But again, we don't have to be terribly concerned about this right now on a practical level. But the reason why we're concerned is because it's a Yom Kippur subject. Person, God forbid, does an Avera that he violated Shabbat in spite of the fact that a person said, don't do it at Shabbat, and there were two witnesses who saw it. And there's no Beit Din to do anything about it. But in theory, you did something that you violate an Avera that goes with Skila. So on Yom Kippur, you have to deal with that. You have to deal with that on that level. So the Rambam says, the special halacha that those who are executed, the family does not mourn. There's no din of Avelis at all for these people. And therefore, he said, that's like a detail in Hilchot Evel. You have a million halachot in Dinei Evel. This is a little small detail. But he says, "Lefizeh." Therefore, kalalti halachot elu basefer hazeh. Now you know why I stuck in the laws of mourning into this book, which deals with judiciary and authority, because he's going to deal with. He dealt already with Hilchot Sanhedrin, Hilchot Edut, and all that. And now there's a category of people who were executed, who would be executed, where the family would not mourn their deaths. And therefore, I felt it was an opportune moment. I mean, up to a moment, he's at the end of the book already, and he's like under pressure. He's got to stick it in somewhere. And he puts it over here. Shehein me'en kfura biyom mita shehi mitzvat asei. That the idea that the execution executed person, the Torah says in Parshat Ki Tetze, that they actually made a public view of what happened. They wanted people to really get a little bit of a shock. And they actually hanged the body for a day. But then they took the body down right away. And on that day, they buried him. Ki kavor tikperenu bayomahu. And the Rambam says, from there, we derive the halacha of everybody's burial. The mitzvah of burial is derived from that parak. And what's interesting, from where do we learn the mitzvah of Kvura, of everybody, from the parsha of Harugei Beit Din, from the execution scene. So that gives the Rambam an entree to talk about the laws of mourning within the context of Beit Din. So he knows that it's a little bit touchy, and a little bit, not as smooth as he'd like it to be, like in other places. So he goes on to explain why he put it here. There are a handful of places where the Rambam takes the pain to explain to us his thinking of classification. And this happens to be one of them. Now,
we don't learn burial from the whole story of Avram coming to bury.
No, we don't learn. You'll see in a second. We don't learn from Sefer Breishit. We don't learn mitzvot from Sefer Breishit before Matan Torah. What they did. And the only reason we do a Brit Milah is not because Avram Avinu did a Brit Milah, because the Kadosh Baruch Hu repeated the mitzvah at Har Sinai. Yeah.
Did they sit
Shiva Feliashim? They sit Shiva Feliashim. All right. Now, it's not on the page, but I'm just going to read to you from the Sefer Mitzvot, where he talks about Avelut. In the very first section of, where he talks about Beit HaMikdash activities, one of the first sections, he's discussing Beit HaMikdash activities as a corollary to the mitzvah of believing in God, knowing that God exists. Knowing that God exists, if I just flip through, you can see, knowing that God exists, knowing that He's one, the love of God, the awe of God, serving God, tefillah, davening, the mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem, Kriyat Shema, these are all, obviously, all first cousins, all these mitzvot, to Anoch Hashem Elokecha, tefillin, Tzvil Nchayat, Tzvil Nchorosh, Tzitzis. I'm just following in order here. And then he gets into ideas of Beit HaMikdash, which also, you have to build the Beit HaMikdash, and all the details of awe, morah of the Mikdash, the role of the Levim, the role of the Kohanim, and all the various mitzvot that you have with regard to the Kohanim. Many, many mitzvot, one after the other. It brings me up to mitzvah 37. Mitzvah 37, and I just scanned through, just according to the order. Mitzvah 37, the Rambam says, Hatzivui shenitztavinu sheyitamu hakohanim lekrovim haneskarim b'Torah. The mitzvah is that, in spite of the fact that there's a don't, emor al hakohanim b'nei Aaron lenefesh lo yitama b'amav, I'm telling you, the Kohanim, do not defile yourself, don't become tamei meit, but there's a mitzvah, La Yitama, that specifically for the seven relatives, not only is it permissible, but it's actually a mitzvah. Okay, but that's to become Tamei Meit. So Rambam continues and says, if he gets into the whole, he goes through all the business of the relatives, he says, Vezu atzma mitzvat evel. Klomar shekol adam Yisrael chayav litabel al krovim. The whole rationale behind the mitzvah that a kohen, although throughout his years as a kohen, does not get into tumat meit, but if one of his immediate relatives dies, he is obliged to become tamei, to deal with the kfura, and so on, to be maspid. This, the ascent, what's really behind all this, is the mitzvah of mourning, that the avel, who happens to be a kohen, has to mourn the loss of his immediate relatives, and the Torah gave it over in the framework of the kohen. That's the way the Torah decided to give over the framework of the mitzvah. Like we once talked about Trum Shabbat, the Torah gave over the mitzvah, at least according to Rama, in the framework of Am Yisrael walking in the Midbar and Al Yetzayish Mem Komo B'Yom Shvi'i, don't go out on Shabbat to collect the man. But it's a mitzvah, according to the Rambam, it's a mitzvah for all of us. None of us are going outside to collect the man. We're collecting the money, but not the man. Here, the Torah gives the mitzvah in the context of the Kohanim. But the real mitzvah, and it goes into now Dinei Evel, and so on, which means the Rambam didn't have a parsha in the Chumash to really talk about Dinei Evel. But he links the whole concept of Evel to the Parsha of Kohanim. And in the Mishnah Torah, he does something different. He links the Parsha of Evel to executions, to the laws of Beit Din. Now this is not strange. The Rambam sometimes will classify a mitzvah in one book one way, and another book another way, for a variety of reasons. The Sefer Mitzvot, the Rambam has in mind the Chumash. He very much has in mind the Chumash. He wants that we should understand the mitzvah as it emanates from the Torah. all you see from the parsha of the executed person who was hanging, that they had to bury him that day, you don't learn the laws of Evel, mourning. All you do is you can learn the mitzvah of Kfura, that you can learn. But not the laws of Evel. Who said you have to mourn? You have to bury the body, but you don't say you have to mourn. But here, if the Rambam sees that the real idea, the central point of the Kohen being Metamei Meit, is actually an expression of Avelut, so he actually says, I have Avelut right here. I've got Avelut right here. Okay, that sounds nice. Now let's go back to the source sheet, source number 3. Yeah?
Is there any reason we don't know the dates, or do we know, and I don't know, that the Avot died? Like, we don't know, sure.
There are traditions for some of them, like Rachel Imenu, Yud Aleph Cheshvan. And there are traditions as to when the Avot were born. There's a Gemara Masechet Rosh Hashanah Yud Aleph, whether they were born in Tishrei or born in Nisan. It all follows the same machloket, whether the world was created in Nisan, created in Tishrei. But Yitzchak was born in Nisan, that's pretty sure. Different suggestions. So even the Zayin Adar of Moshe Rabbeinu, it's not ironclad. It's not in the Chumash. The only Yahrzeit death of a person mentioned in Chumash is Aaron HaKohen. The only one. It says Chodesh HaChamishi Bechad LaChodesh, Rosh Chodesh Av. The only one. So all the others are conjectures. That's all. Source number 3, the Rambam at the very beginning of the Halachot in Mishneh Torah says mitzvat asei litabel al akruvim, and he brings a pasuk shenemar ve'achalti chatat hayom hayitav b'nei Hashem. Where's that pasuk? In Parshat Shmini, when the Aaron Cohen's boys died on the opening ceremony of the Mishkan, and Moshe thought dorash Moshe v'nei nisraf b'nei soraf. Moshe thought that Aaron and his sons, Elazar and Itamar, the surviving sons, would nevertheless partake in the eating of the korbanot of the day. And Aaron responded, Ha'achalti chatat hayom hayitav b'nei Hashem? With a question mark. Would this have been proper? And Moshe Rabbeinu agrees that Aaron actually taught him halacha. It's a very fascinating parasha. But there it says, Achalti chatat hayom, which means whatever's going on, it's today, and not tomorrow. And that leads the Rambam to explain, Ein avelut min haTorah ela biyom rishon buvad. Avelut is only on day one. Shehu yom amita v'yom ha'kfura, which should correspond to the day of the passing and day of the kfura. Now sometimes it happens, a person dies at nighttime, and they're able to do the levaya yet in the daytime of that Hebrew calendar date. But many times not. Thank you very much, Al. Appreciate it. I forgot to set this up. Thank you. So this is the Rambam's opinion that there is such a mitzvah of Avelut. Why do I say this? Because Chachmei Ashkenaz, Rashi and the Balei HaTosafot, were of the opinion that all of the halachot of Avelut are rabbinic. That there's no biblical mitzvah to mourn relatives. That's a fascinating thing, because everybody knows that there's avelus. Really, it's only rabbinic. It's only the rabbanan. No, they believe that there is a thing called aninut. Aninut is the stage that a person goes through from the moment of the passing of the immediate relative until the levaya, until the burial, until the end of the burial. That aninut is biblical. According to everybody. For example, a person is not allowed to eat, partake from a korban if a person is in aninut. And okay, that's a different story, that the person doesn't say brachot and so on. There are all kinds of halachot of aninut. That's correct. But that is d'oraita. And some say that's what Aaron HaKohen was going through. This is all before Nadav and Avihu were buried. So he's saying, I'm not allowed to eat the korbanot, so that's why I burnt it. Moshe Rabbeinu is trying to offer a psak, Darosh, Darash Moshe, Vinei, Saraf, and all of a sudden it's burnt. And he was angry. Why did they burn the carbon? Why did they eat it? So, but the Rambam explains that they're going to be avelim right after the levaya. When does the avelut kick in? Right after the kfura. Not when they get to the shiva house. Right after the kfura. And that's why if it's, let's say, late in the day, so the avelim can take their shoes off at the cemetery and at the shura receive tanchumim, right, the first moment of nichum, and all of a sudden it's sundown, day one is already behind us. Now it's already day two of avelut. And the halacha is, halacha kedibrei ha-mekel be'evel, every pesach in the world knows that we try to be lenient with every type of scenario for avelut, because it's hard enough as it is, there's no mitzvah to extend it by another day if you don't have to. To the extent that Rabbi Moshe Feinstein says that you can even rely on Rabbeinu Tam, who has a very novel view as to when the day comes to an end. He said it's not astronomical sundown, but it's the second sundown, he calls it, Shkiah Shnia, which in New York City was 40 minutes after sundown. Which means if the Levaya ended within 40 minutes after sundown, day one already counted. Tremendous Chiddush. So you have this business of the Rambam taking a stand that Avelut is biblical. But where does he derive it from? From Parshat Shmini. Derives from Parshat Shmini. In Sefer Mitzvot, he derived it from Parshat Emor. And in his introduction, he categorizes it with executions. He's got Parshat Ki Tetzé in his mind. I mean, can the Rambam get his act together? I mean, what's happening here? It indicates that the complexity of Torah, that sometimes certain facets of mitzvot show up in different scenarios, and what the Rambam's trying to do was give expression to all of them in different contexts. I'll just give you an example. I think it's not a bad example. Where does the Rambam talk about the mitzvah of Sfirat HaOmer in the Mishneh Torah? So let's say, where is it in Shulchan Aruch? Where would we expect to find the laws of Sfirat HaOmer in Shulchan Aruch? In which of the four sections? Orachayim, Yoridea, Ebenezer, Choshen Mishpat? It's in Orachayim. It's in Hilchos Yom Tov. It's in Hilchos Yom Tov. You're going to see it right after, between Hilchos Pesach and Hilchos Shavuos. You're going to have all of Dinei Sfiras HaOmer. With everything. It makes a lot of sense. That's a very natural setting. Then Rambam could have figured out in Sefer Zmanim, which is the third of the 14 books, he's got Hilchot Yom Tov, he's got Hilchot Chometz HaMatzah, he's got all these halachot there. He could have squeezed it in comfortably enough, you know, without being what they call doichak, you know, pushed, forced. It could have been okay. But he doesn't. He talks about it later on in the seventh book, Hilchot Tmidin U'Musafin, in the context of Korban Tamid and extra Korbanot, Korban Musaf, because there's a Korban factor involved in Sfirat HaOmer. U'Sfartem Lachem Mimochrat HaShabbat Miyom Haviachem Et Omer HaTnufa Shev HaShabbatot Motiyena. There's a Korban that was offered on the morning of the 16th of Nisan, and there was another Korban offered on the 50th day of the Omer, even though we don't count day 50, which we call Chag HaShavuot, the two breads, the Shtei Alechem. And these two korbanot, the korban haOmer on the 16th, the second day of Pesach, 16th of Nisan, and the Shtei Alechem on the Shavuot, are bridged by this mitzvah called Sfirat HaOmer. So it's also a good place to talk about it. So he talks about it in the Mishnah Torah in Hilchot Midin U'Musafin, the end of Perek Zayin. I remember a comment once by the Rav's son, Rav Professor Chaim Soloveitchik. He said, you know, today you go to the bookstores and you get, you know, all the book, you get these halachic monographs on mitzvot that, you know, some guy felt he had to publish a sefer. So you can take a mitzvah like Sfirat HaOmer and you write a 500, you know, page book on Sfirat HaOmer, and all you want to know about Sfirat HaOmer, I'm afraid to ask, and things like that. He said, you know, Rambam spent 7 lines on Sfirat HaOmer. Wasn't really, I mean, he said it in a very sarcastic way, you know, not much to write about Sfirat HaOmer. You know, to put out a book of 500 pages, you know, 300 pages. What's there to write already? Okay. So,
that's why the Rambam needed the index.
That's why they
needed
it.
Never found
right. That's right. Today, we have the responsa project of Bar Ilan. So all you do is a search. And it's easy. So we can put Rambam's index out the pasture. But It was a very useful tool. Very useful tool. So where does the Rambam talk about Sfirat HaOmer in Sefer Mitzvot? Okay, he's got a whole unit of Korbanot, so you figure he's going to stash it over there. No, he doesn't. He has it in the Seder of the Chagim. We started with this before Rosh Hashanah. We did the Seder of the Chagim. That's where it is. It's between. It's after Pesach. He's got it there. Why? Because in the Sefer Mitzvot, he's got his eye on the Chumash. And where is Sfirat HaOmer show up the first time in the Chumash? In Parshat Emor, in the Parshat HaMoadot. Eile Moad HaShem Mikrei Kodesh. Hashem Tekru Otam HaMoadam. That's where Sfirat HaOmer is. So in Sefer Mitzvot, he's linked to the Chumash. In the Mishnah Torah, he doesn't have the Chumash in mind. He's got concepts in mind. So he opts to put it over there. In Birkat Kohanim, where does the Rambam talk about Birkat Kohanim in Mishnah Torah? Talks about it as a maftir, like an add-on, to the Chot Tefillah. Okay. It's a good place, as good as any, because it's like part of Chazarat HaShatz and so on. Now, Birkat Kohanim has two phases. There's the everyday phase, and there's the Beit HaMikdash phase. If there's Beit HaMikdash, there's Birkat Kohanim every morning. So you could have talked about it in the context of Beit HaMikdash also. But he decided to put it where it's very, very applicable and the Chot Tefillah. It's relevant whether there is Beit HaMikdash, whether there's no Beit HaMikdash, fine. Yet in the Sefer Mitzvot, the Rambam has it stashed in the laws of the Kohanim, Beit HaMikdash activity. Why? Because where does it show up in the Chumash? So first time, it's really Parshat Naso, right before Vahi B'Yom Kalot Moshe Ta'lakim Et HaMishkan. It has to do with the Mishkan construction. So that's where it is. And by association, in Parshat Shmini, on the opening ceremony of the Mishkan, so there it also says that Aaron blessed the nation. So not question, the question what the bracha was, Rashi says it was Birkat Kohanim. So wherever you see bracha of Kohanim in the Chumash, it's associated with Beit HaMikdash. So in the Sefer Mitzvot, where the Rambam is linked to the Chumash, that's where he places the mitzvah. But in Mishnah Torah, the Rambam frees himself from the shackles of the Psukim and is free. He's a free agent. He can just put it wherever he thinks it's conceptually correct to put it. So it's not that there's a machloket. It's not that the Rambam changed his mind. It's not that there's a contradiction. It's that the Rambam, in each sefer, had a different policy, a literary policy of why he does things. And that has to be understood. So in Sefer Mitzvot, the Rambam opts to link Avelut to the Psukim of Parshat Emor, of the Kohanim. In Mishnah Torah, the Rambam wants to develop a concept that's not necessarily linked to the Psukim per se. And that's why he touches on Harugei Beit Din, the executions. I have a hunch, Rambam didn't say this, this is like my add-on here, that what the Rambam is pointing out is that every person's demise is an execution of a Beit Din. There's sometimes the Beit Din Shalmata, the court that executes, but there's also a Beit Din Shalmala, a upper divine court. And when a person passed away, there was a decision by a Beit Din Shalmala. So what's going to be true halachically with the Beit Din Shalmata is also true of Beit Din Shalmala. What the Rambam is actually saying is that when a person dies, it's a result of some type of imperfection. Had human beings been absolutely perfect, it doesn't mean that there wouldn't be death in this world, but it would mean that at this moment the person would not have died. There's a whole question as to Adam and Chava in Gan Eden. Did Adam and Chava slip by eating from the Eitz HaDa'at and that brought death into this world? Or was death an integral part of the created world, but they brought upon themselves prematurely the tragedy of death? The day you eat from this tree, you're going to die. But there was already a midat ha-chesed v'rachamim that kicked in, because they didn't die that day. They were kicked out. They were ejected from Gan Eden and thrown into Galut. Vaygaresh et Adam. It was Galut. And the Medrash in Eicha draws a parallel between Adam and Chava being thrown out of Gan Eden and Am Yisrael being thrown out of Eretz Yisrael, which is one of the indications that the geographic location of Gan Eden on this world is Eretz Yisrael. So if you haven't figured out that we're living in Gan Eden because you're reading the newspapers too much. Read the newspapers, you think you're living in Gehenna. But we're actually living in Gan Eden. And the Medrash says so. And there's a direct parallel. Vaygaresh, Vaygaresh, and so on. But it brings a whole slew of psukim. So there, it doesn't say you're going to die. It says, ki afar ata vel afar, ki ata afar vel afar tashuv. Because that's the way man is. He's finite, he's human, he's going to die. But it's going to happen earlier then. Because the only one that's infinite is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And if man were originally supposed to live forever, then he's really competing with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Ki yodei Elokim, the dat tov hara, what the Nachash tried to suggest to Adam and Chava, you'll be like God. You're not going to be like God. Not going to work. So when Yeshayahu Navi says, Bila mavat lanetzach, macha Hashem lakim dimame al kol panim, and we sing this on the Leila Seder, at the very end of Leila Seder, Chad Gadya, v'ata kadosh b'chu v'shachat tamalach ha-mavet. What does that mean? It means zeh, gemal, no more death? That's not the way it's understood. It means that death will not have that sadness, the tragic aspect to it, the unknown part of it. It's going to be different. It's going to be very different. It's going to be a different experience completely. And from the days of Adam until today, even though a person, you know, may have been fundamentally a good person, but perfect we're not. You can believe Shlomo Melech, ki Adam tzadik, ein tzadik ba'aretz asher yaseh tov ve'lo yechata. You can trust him. He knew, and it was true. It was true. Just a quick anecdote, and somebody remember where I'm up to now. Just I'll try to close this window.
Somebody, thank you.
Rivka beats being a nobody. Right? Somebody is a madrega. It's a madrega, right? You don't want to be a nobody, God forbid. Where was I? Rabbi Lamb once told me that when he became president of the yeshiva in 1976, NYU, so he decided to go down to the cafeteria and just mingle with some of the students. So he's waiting online, you know, NYU, those who remember the cafeteria, there were three prices. There was for students, there was for faculty, and there was for outside guests. So, fair enough. So he's waiting online. There's a woman, Kupayit, who doesn't have a clue who he is. And she asks him, do you teach here? She says, I'm not teaching here now. Are you a student here? No, I'm not a student. Are you an outside guest? No, I'm really not an outside guest. So she says, if you're not a guest, if you're not a teacher here, and you're not a student, you're a nobody. Rabbi Lamb told me it was very, very therapeutic to hear from the Kupayit that you're a nobody. It's very good for your gaiva, he said. It was very good. He said, you know, you just became president of YU, you go downstairs, and you're told you're a nobody. It's terrific. Apropos, Rav Mital Zichron Lebracha, he lived in Give Up Moldechai. So he davened in Rehov Shachal, he davened in the local shul in the morning, and the Gabbai was informed to skip Tachnun that day because there was a Chatan in Sheva Bracha. So, okay, fair enough. Everybody's happy, especially if it's Monday or Thursday. You know, it's a long Tachnun. Fine. So at the end of davening, everybody goes over, wish the guy Mazel Tov. They don't know a fellow stranger. So Rav Mital also goes over and was a Mazel Tov, and he says, do you know why you got married? Guy looked, was baffled. Baffled. She says, Ani agid lecha. Rav Mital, Ani agid lecha. I'll tell you why you got married. He says, you know, today you're yeshiva bocha, you're learning in a koilel, and then, you know, maybe in 5 years they're going to make you into an assistant of a Maggid Shira there. In 10 years you're going to become a Rosh koilel. And then in 20 years, you're going to become a great Rosh Hashiva. And maybe in 30 years, you might become one of the Gdolim and all that. But you know, you're going to go home every night and your wife's going to tell you who you really are.
Your wife can tell you who you really are.
It's true. All right, where was I? Yes. Who?
Oh, just quoting
Shlomo Melech. Right, ki adam ein tzadik ba'aretz asher yaseh tov v'lo yechata. So we had heard that from the grapevine that Rebbe the Rav was giving an exorbitant amount of money for tzedakah. Now, first of all, you know, to be a big bal tzedakah, to be what we call a philanthropist, you have to be wealthy. It's not that everybody was giving nickels and dimes and he was putting in a quarter in the pushka box. That's not what it was. I found out, and I had this verified, there were, in 1950s, like everybody else, the Rav had a little savings in the bank. He had two fellows who he trusted, and by the Rav, loyalty was like a key operative word. Trusted, mamish trusted, and they were geniuses in the market, in the financial world. And they suggested to him, they'll play a little bit with his money, and it'll grow. And he trusted them. And as it was, without exaggeration, the Rav became a millionaire. A lot most people don't notice. The Rav became a millionaire in seven digits. Millionaire. Had a tremendous amount of money. What people also don't know, he gave 60% away to tzedakah. He supported his own yeshiva Maimonides. He supported his cousins in Yerushalayim in the Brisk Yeshiva who wouldn't look at him because, you know, he committed the two great crimes of becoming a Mizrachist, a Mizrahi Zionist, and he went to university. Mamishtei ostracized them, and the Rav paid a dear price for it, and it was very painful. He supported private people who he knew were destitute. He gave just, 60%. So I once asked him, this is a chutzpahdik question, because it's really not my business. But, you know, as it was, I was driving him, and you were driving over the Tribor Bridge, which I think now is called the RFK, you know, Memorial Bridge. And the Rav had no choice but he had to listen to me because else I'd just drop him off in the middle of the bridge and have to walk. You know? But if he didn't want to answer, he didn't have to answer. And I asked him, I said, Rebbe, there was rumors that the Rav was giving 60% of his, you know, of his hon, what he has, for tzedakah. How does that jive with what the Rambam says? Al yefazer yoter michomesh. Don't give more than 20%. You're obligated to give 10%. But if you're really generous and a tzaddik, 20% is the upper limit. That's what the Gemara says. The Rambam brings it. And if the Rambam brings it, you know, that's better than a Gemara, you know. So the Rav could have just ignored me, could have said, not my business, whatever. He looked at me and he said, you obviously forgot a pasuk in Kohelet. I said, what pasuk? Ki adam ein tzadik ba'aretz asher yaseh tov v'lo yecheta. A person has to have at least one aveira, and I wouldn't want to make Shlomo Melech into a liar. That's what he told me. I, from the Rav Lichtenstein's sons, Ramea Lichtenstein and others, they confirmed to me the whole thing was true. The whole thing was true. That was like amazing. It's amazing. But his sense of humor and such. First of all, from that comment, there was confirmation. It was true. I knew already right then and there it was true. But the way he said it, Ki adam ein tzadik ba'aretz asher yaseh tov v'lo yecheta, means we're all very fine people. Baruch Hashem. Baruch Hashem, we're sitting here, a group of fine people. But everybody slipped here and there. Said that, that's who we are. And that slippage eventually takes its toll in the Beit Din Shalmala. And therefore, every person's passing is a verdict. It's a gzar din of a Beit Din Shalmala. And therefore, what the Torah speaks about, an executed person by Beit Din Shalmata, by the lower court, reflects also on the Beit Din Shalmala. And that's why the Rambam felt that he could talk about the laws of Evel in the context of Beit Din, because it's always an action of Beit Din. So this is already a more philosophical idea, and he's not linked to the Pasuk specifically that deals with Evel, but he rather goes to the Parsha and Ki Teitzei that deals with executions. So you see how the Rambam thought. So the Rabban said that sitting Shiva is actually an experience of doing tshuva on two different levels. He says, you ever notice that many of the restrictions of Avelus, when I say Avelus now I'm speaking of Shiva, are very similar to what we do or don't do on Yom Kippur. Very, very similar. The washing, the shoes, the marital relations, they're just, it's almost a carbon copy. He said, because there's a a cathartic and an atonement process that's going on, and it's happening on two levels. One is ben adam l'chaveiro, between man and man. The other is between man and God. So what's the problem between man and man? Who did he sin? And who is he trying to atone? He's trying to receive atonement for himself for some type of a sin. He says, the tragedy is, we really don't get to know people until after they die. There's a little quip on the last pasuk in Kohelet. Sof davar hakol nishma. When a person's over, that's when everything comes out. You know, I never knew this about this person. Even sometimes children sitting shiva, they start hearing from other people facets of their own parents' lives that they never ever knew. And it's very instructive, by the way. It fills the picture, the whole photo montage, the puzzle. There are pieces missing. And a lot of times you don't really appreciate a person until the person is missing. So Rav used to like to quote this Gemara in source number 7 from Masechet Brachot. It starts, Ki nach nafshei de Rav. When the Amora Rav died, the following occurred. So there's a little bit of a prologue to this in the Rav Shir. The Rav taught Masechet Brachot in 1953 and 1954 at the yeshiva. Today, those notes were published in a sefer by Rav Heshi Reichman, one of the Rambam in YU. So the Rav used to call on somebody always to read the Gemara. And then, you know, sometimes he would grill him with some questions, and that was the hot seat nobody liked to be called on. But usually it was a few lines, and it was said, and then the Rav took over, as they say. Here, the Rav wanted to just cover some territory. So he's telling the reader, the boy in the shir, all right, read, you know, fast, okay, read. So he's reading, and he gets to this point, and he's reading also fast. And all of a sudden the Rav goes, Rega, 1 second, where are you running? After he's been telling him now, you know, turn on the gas, you know, step on the gas, he says, where kinoch nafshe the Rav? Rav passed away. You have no heart. You have no soul. He starts yelling at this boy. He says, how can you read this like this? Poor kid, you know. Like, let me tell you, the guy, I don't know if he came back to the shir again. I have to ask my uncle who was in the shir then. Ozlu Talmidav Batrei Ki Hadadei. The Talmidim, obviously, when they heard that the Rebbe passed away, you know, there's Aloha, a Rav Muvak, a Rav who you studied most of your Torah from, most of your Chokhmah, you have an obligation of Kriya. They have a lot of Kriya. Fine. So they did Kriya, and then they're coming back from the Levaya. Amri Nezel V'Nechel Lachma on the Har Danak. Let's sit down, we have to eat lunch. They're walking back, and there's a riverbank. And they asked the question about Mesubin. Is this considered like sitting around a table? The question is picnicking. You know, you go on a picnic in the Chekateva, you know, sitting on the ground, is that called Masubin to say that we can do a Zimun? That's the question. And they didn't know the answer. So look at the last line. Come, the second to the last line in the middle. Come Rav Ada Barahava, one of the students, Ahader Kar Eila Achore, he rips the garment another time. Vikara Kriya Acharina, he rips another time. Amar, he says, Nach nafshe de Rav. Rav died. Ubrikat mezona lo gamrina. We didn't finish learning the laws of benching. The Rav loved this Gemara. Because he said, from here you see that even though at the moment of the Levaya and the Shiva, I mean, there's a lot of mourning, but there are all of a sudden a punch of mourning that happens later on in life. He said, usually on a Yom Tov. All of a sudden, somebody's missing. Person could die in Shvat, the Tevis, whatever. Comes Pesach, somebody's missing at the Seder. And the Rav once explained that this was the reason that Eastern European Jewry expanded the minig of Yisker from Yom Kippur experience to the Sholosh Regalim. Because on Yom Tov, you really feel it. You make a wedding, somebody's missing. You make a this, somebody's missing. There are moments. And the Talmidim of Rav realized that, I wish the Rav was here. Sometimes I have that feeling, you know, you read something in the newspaper, you saw public debate and everything. If the Rav would only be here to get up and say what has to be said. You feel it. This is Avelus. The Rav said that this is the problem of the moment of Evel. You feel this loss, that I missed opportunities one after the other to really get to know the person. So that's one level of tshuva. And the other level of tshuva is between man and God. Why between man and God? Because a Kadosh Baruch Hu, now sometimes, you know, a person lived out a nice, happy life and didn't suffer, was already 99 years old, and we say, Darko Shalaylam, and life ends. We accept it. It's sad. Remember when both my father and father-in-law passed away? It was sad, but they weren't tragic experiences. Tragic experiences is just 2 days ago. Right. 2 days ago. A boy who, because of certain mental situation, did not have to go to the army, or physical, and steps himself into the army anyway, because he wants to serve in a special unit for special children. And Nebuch perishes under the wheels of a machabel. I mean, it's so heartbreaking. And the other chayalot, and all of them, this be struck down. You know, right in the middle of nowhere, in the middle of life, everything, especially a young person, life, all life ahead of them. How can you not have a little Rabban Shem, how can you do this? How can you not have that? It's natural. It's there. I have a whole speech about ka'as. How do you deal with anger against God? The one who asked me to give that speech was 5 years ago, Debbie Gross from the Crisis Center. She said she wanted me to speak to the madrichot, those who man the phones 24 hours a day, and all kinds of difficult stories of abuse. Are people angry with God? Of course they're angry with God. Why did I have to be thrusted into this kind of family situation? How do you deal with that? Not so simple. Not simple at all. And a person sitting shiva can have problems. That's why we say, Habmokam Yenachim. It's a Kadosh Baruch Hu from a distance. Baruch Kvar Hashem Mimkomo. Because a lot of times Rabban Hashem is not there. Not there. So you hope that a Kadosh Baruch Hu from a distance, you'll learn to bring him back into your life. The Rav says, that's a tshuva, ben Adam Lamokam. Between Adam Lamokam. Kadosh Baruch Hu is not here now. He's over there. He's over there. But you can bring him back. You can bring him back. The process of shiva and shloshim and yud bet chodesh for a parent is actually a very redeeming type of experience. Of not just exiting properly and positively the avelus, but properly coming to terms with what happened so they can go back to live. And as the halacha says, asul l'tabel yoter midai. Person a year and a half, 2 years after the passing of a parent, I can't go to the wedding yet. I got invited to a wedding, I can't go. That's also. No. You have to go to the smachot. You got to get yourself back on track. You have to continue living. You can't play ki ereid el bini avel sheola. Chazal say that's how Yaakov knew that Yosef wasn't dead. Because the avel usually is able to somehow, doesn't mean he's going to forget. It means that it has the capacity of pulling the life, you know, back together and really and continuing to make a life. Sitting shiva and going through any of the phases of Evel, to a large degree, you know, puts a person into a much more somber and serious mood. And it's not an accident that Shlomo HaMelech said, Tov lelechet mibleit evel milechet mibet mishteh. Now, given the choice, I'd love to go to a party, but then going to a Beis Avel. And I think all of you would agree. But Shlomo HaMelech said, you know, at a party, you're frivolous. At a party, you know, your mind is all kinds of different places. At a Beit Evel, all of a sudden, everybody is, like, focused on the most serious things, and that's also very, very instructive for people. So we exit Sefer Breshit now with that kind of a feeling. You know, Yaakov Avinu passed away, and the Shvatim passed away. But it's, you know, Ve'elu Shmot Bnei Yisrael Abay Mitzrayim by Mincha already in Shmot, and Am Yisrael is going to move on. It's going to move on with the memory of Yaakov Uvanav until this very day, as we move on with the memory of our own family members who have passed away, and we're able to do this. We are able to do this. I mean, the animal world doesn't have even a clue of what this is all about. Human beings do. And Am Yisrael has even sanctified the memory. We don't sanctify the dead. We have kvod hamet. There's no such thing as kedushat hamet. It doesn't exist in halacha. But we sanctify the memory. The memory is very, very holy. Very holy for us. And, you know, on that score, so what we say, Macha Hashem Elokim dim'a mi'al kol panim, so we indeed, we ask Kadosh Baruch Hu that we know that Malchum Ovis is not going on permanent vacation, but at least to somehow ease the pain. Ease the pain, you know, make it more comprehensible to us, perhaps, on some level. And one can even go through a process of Evel with some measure of Ahavat Hashem. And I think that's all part of V'yavtat Hashem Elokecha b'chol levavcha u'v'chol nafshecha. People have different moods and different feelings. And it's possible to have a Kadosh Baruch Hu there with us. As David HaMelech said, Gam ki eilech b'geitz al mavet lo ira ra, why? Ki ata imadi. It is possible. David HaMelech achieved it. We can achieve it as well. Okay. Stable. Yes.